Next case is TriMed v. Stryker, 2009-14-23. Mr. Grossman.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. We respectfully request this Court reverse the District Court and its finding of the patent suit was obvious. The District Court totally ignored TriMed's description of the scope and content of the prior art, which was highly disputed. The District Court also ignored TriMed's statement of its differences between the prior art and the claims of the 839 patent.
Of course, what the District Court did was follow the findings of fact and conclusions of law of your opponent. Your opponent's statement, and you're saying your opponent ignored them.
The opponent ignored him, and the judge followed Stryker, who ignored him.
But weren't they presented to the court?
Sure, they were presented in our statement of facts.
So the court didn't necessarily ignore them. The court just adopted a document that didn't just discuss them.
I agree that's what the court did, which I think has the effect of ignoring them.
Well, because this is summary judgment. If this were a trial, it would be a different situation. But this is summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. And in summary judgment, our facts, TriMed's facts, if they're supported, have to be...
Yeah, the court can't... Your argument is the court can't say there's no dispute over the facts when there in fact is.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not on summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. And all three of the four obviousness inquiries, factual, were highly disputed. The objective indicia, the scope and content of the prior art, and the differences between the claims and the prior art.
Secondary considerations?
Yes, Your Honor, substantial secondary considerations. And those are the Stryker's comments that the 839 patent in plate was new, revolutionary. I mean, those are buzzwords that typically the plaintiff tries to describe its products. So Stryker, that they admittedly copied, obtained, sent to Germany for copying, that it changed the way surgeons performed these operations, that it was urgent that Stryker obtain TriMed's patented pin plate.
Was there any dispute over what these references themselves disclosed?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, for example, in the May reference, is there any dispute that there were holes disclosed and that some holes were bigger than others and some holes were used for guide wires and et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, the dispute regarding May, Your Honor, there were multiple disputes. One was the holes 8 that were used for TriMed's positions, those are only used for put temporary guide wires in.
Not pins.
And those guide wires would not traverse the fracture and enter the stable bone and fixate the fracture. And Stryker's allegation was those guide wires are fixation pins. And our position was they're not fixation pins. Now, regarding May, one of the very important claimed elements is that the fixation pin enters the stable fragment, traverses the fracture, and extends from the fractured fragment while preventing compression along the fracture. May uses screws, which is the old way, which would cause compression across the fracture. But even Stryker's expert in his declaration and in his chart does not say that May will prevent compression across the fracture. And that's a very important claimed element.
Does May allow the fixation pin to slide axially?
The guide wire.
Okay, so it allows the guide wire to...
Yes, but, yeah. it will go axially into the hole 8, but it's not going to prevent compression.
Because it's removed.
It's removed and it's not fixating anything. Yeah. And you have compression caused by the screws that go into hole 7 and hole 6. in which one of the bones is the stable fragments brought up against the plate, and the fractured fragment is independently brought up against the plate, thereby causing compression across the fracture. So may in and by itself doesn't disclose the critical element of last element of the claim.
My understanding is that the structure disclosed in the Clancy reference is the use of these K wires inserted percutaneously, in other words, inserted through the skin, and inserted for a period of time, and at an 8-week mark after insertion, they would be removed and not left implanted in a patient. Whereas the structure disclosed in the May reference contemplates a plate that would be inserted and implanted into a patient, screwed into the various bone joint portions and left implanted in the patient. Is my understanding the reference correct?
Yes, Your Honor, if I can add.
And was there any disputed question of fact presented on the record as to how these various structures operated and what effect the use of pins might be in an implant situation compared with what effect an implanted structure might have, if at all, in any kind of percutaneous operation?
There were disputed facts in that regard, Your Honor. There was a lot there. Regarding May, there was disputed facts in that TriMed's facts were those pins, those guide wires that are used, are temporarily placed in the bone as the plate is being aligned and screwed into the fractured and stable fragment. And those pins, those guide wires, never traverse the fracture and never enter the stable bone and do not fixate the fracture, and are only in there temporarily and are subsequently removed after the fracture is secured with the bones, with the screws in the plate. That's what TriMed's position was. Stryker's position was pins would go into the guide wire holes 8, and that's it. There was no further statement of those, and we said, well, there has to be further statement because the claims require more than pins going into holes. The claims.
What I was trying to get at in and I apologize, probably an inarticulate way, was whether the question before us is the existence of genuine issues of material fact or simply the ultimate question of obviousness. Because I know in the brief there's lots of discussion about whether there are all kinds of genuine issues of material fact, but if indeed there are no genuine issues of material fact because it's apparent and everybody is in agreement as to what the reference is disclosed, then the question is really one of law, the ultimate conclusion of obviousness.
Okay, I got it. I'll respond. Okay. With regard to Clancy, we discussed each previous prior art quickly. With regard to the Clancy prior art, both parties agree that's percutaneous pinning, in which the pins are inserted. I don't think there's a dispute that the pins are subsequently removed. In addition, TriMed states that an external cast is required to totally immobilize the arm from the shoulder to the wrist to stabilize so the pins don't move. Stryker didn't mention that in their brief, but didn't contest that fact in the briefing. So I don't think Clancy's in dispute. Regarding May, again, TriMed's facts were those guide wires are not fixation pins and do not traverse the fracture and are temporarily removed and don't have many of the claimed elements. Okay. Stryker's position was those, you have pins and you have holes. You have wires and you have holes. We agree with that. There's wires and there are holes. But there's a lot more that's required under the claims. Stryker didn't argue with that. So their facts were wrong. We said why they're right, or what the right facts were, and there's more. So I guess there's a dispute there what may is. But I don't know if it's a genuine dispute because you can see what it is. You know, there is no disclosure of the guide wires being pins or of the pins traversing the fracture going into the stable bone or those guide wires preventing compression. It's just not there. So,
I mean, were there genuine issues of material fact as to maybe some of the functions performed by various structures? For example, do the holes in May, clearly they perform the function of providing a place where the screw can be inserted and attached to a bone. Was there any evidence or testimony, anything to suggest that, well, maybe those holes could also perform other functions and that those other functions would be relevant to this question of obviousness? For example, they could perform the function of providing a location for stabilizing the end of a pin.
There was no discussion that the only facts regarding those holes were Dr. Medoff's declaration saying those holes would perform the function of providing a place to put the screw in to screw the bones up against the plate, causing compression.
Was there no testimony or evidence that saying that those of ordinary skill in the art would recognize that those holes could be used as a means for stabilizing the end of a pin?
No, there wasn't. And going back at the time of the invention, which was 1995, there was no evidence that one skilled in the art would believe that. The only evidence was that because of the unpredictable results, no one thought of that, of just stabilizing the end of a pin with a hole.
But in the summary judgment order, the district court found that May showed both pins and plates with holes, but you disputed that, right? You said May doesn't show pins, it shows guide wires. Guide wires don't operate the same way as pins.
Yes.
They come out. They're not permanent. They don't compress. They don't cross the fracture. They don't go into the bone on the other side. And so I guess my question, maybe like Judge Lynn's, is does that really produce a question of fact? If it's clear to me, I agree with you that they don't. Is there really a dispute of genuine issue of fact?
Okay. I don't think there is, Your Honor. I mean, I would be very happy of getting this, if this is reversed and say, okay, there's questions of fact for the jury. I mean, that would be the safe way to proceed. But I think it's clear on its face, there's nothing in this prior art that has the claimed elements or that it was obvious to combine. They couldn't even rebut the secondary considerations, which was we really relied upon. They're secondary. We're not going to prove our case with these secondary considerations. It just shows that it wasn't obvious. So on its face, May doesn't have the critical element, the holes to provide the pin to actually slide while preventing compression, and the holes also.
The district court made fact findings saying that this all achieved predictable results.
Right.
Kind of cursory, but I imagine you disputed that.
Yes. Well,
what would be your evidence in dispute of it?
The evidence of the results were not predictable would be, one, the prior art May Clancy was so fundamentally different that a slidable pin to fixate a fracture was never used without an external cast that totally immobilized the arm for 4 to 8 weeks from the shoulder down to the wrist. Now what we're doing is instead of using this big external cast, you're going to use a hole in a plate and you're going to get total mobility right after surgery. So it's so different. Who knew it would work? Okay, now with regard to
Did your expert say that?
Yes.
What, is that what you attached to?
It, it's Dr. Medoff's declaration. Okay. That the, from an engineering perspective, it was this very, a totally structural change from what was the accepted procedures, and that's why surgeons were so skeptical and reluctant, including Stryker, who knew about the pin plate in 97 but didn't introduce theirs until 2004. But the unpredictability, Your Honor, also is that the wrist is a joint. You get full rotation, full translational movement right after surgery, and the pin is moving. It's not stuck in there. It's going to move a little bit, and a little movement in a pin, and you're talking about fractured fragment, very small, can compromise the fusion of the fracture. And so the fact that the pin is not, your arm's not going to be totally immobilized, and you're going to have total movement of the wrist right after surgery, with the pin there, it's not stabilized on its far, on its near end. It's going to move. That was unpredictable, whether or not that would work to allow the fracture to fuse properly. That's the unpredictability.
Mr. Grossman, I think your time is up, but you've been asked a lot of questions. We'll give you your rebuttal time back, 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And if Mr. Vogler needs that time, we'll give it to him, too.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The claims are invalid because of the way they were written as apparatus claims. Very important, not method claims, apparatus claims, and how they were interpreted broadly in the prior appeal. The prior interpretation relates to the really the key element in this case is the hole. And in that appeal, under the broad claim construction advocated by TriMet, a properly sized hole in the plates was determined to be sufficient structure to perform the stated functions of allowing the pin to slide axially and stabilizing the pin against displacement of the plane of the plate. Now, there were probably a lot of discussions about genuine issues, disputed fact. I don't think counsel for TriMet understands the obviousness argument. A lot of the disputes certainly may relate to anticipation. The district court denied the motion relative to anticipation. But as far as the obviousness...
He crossed it out on the proposed...
He did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, if you want to criticize anyone, you criticize me because I wrote those proposed findings, fact, conclusions of law, and I believe they're accurate, and I believe they're appropriate, and I think a judge can do that. Maybe is it the best way? I don't know. But you know, I don't think it deserves criticism because there are Stryker's findings and conclusions based on expert report of an expert. But on the obviousness analysis, the key features of the prior art really aren't disputed. And here's how it goes. There's no dispute that the prior art had plates for screws to fix these types of fractures. There's no dispute that the prior art used the pinning mechanism to treat fractures where there were small fragments broken away from the main bone. There's no dispute about that. And as far as May, there's no dispute, at least to this extent. It was a plate to be implanted for fractures of the distal end. It had holes of different sizes. One hole was smaller than the other for a guide wire. Now, there's a dispute about what that guide wire does, and I understand that, but that's not the main function of our obviousness argument. That goes to anticipation. But despite that, the patent at column 3, line 64 and 65, 66, defines a pin as a wire. So it's pretty close. But the analysis goes like this.
You know, there's nothing in May to suggest that any of the wires would extend through the fracture.
That's right. But there
so there's a difference there.
To that extent. But again,
and May stabilized in bone on the other side. There's nothing in May to suggest that either.
That's right. But that goes to anticipation.
Well, it's also relevant in the context of obviousness, the extent that you're arguing that it would have been obvious to one ordinary skill in the art to combine, for example, May and Clancy.
Or Leibovitz.
Or Leibovitz.
Clancy. Because
you have different devices used for different types of surgical procedures. In May, for example, there's a device that's implanted where the the patient's wrist is opened up and the device is implanted, whereas the Clancy structure, for example, is percutaneously applied.
And that's correct.
Different type of surgical procedure completely.
The Leibovic article indicates use of plates, pins, and screws together in an application. But the one way to prove obviousness, and this is our case, is to show that there exists at the time of the invention a known problem for which there was an obvious solution encompassed by the claims. That's our case. If you buy it, I think we're in. If you don't buy it, then we're not in. And what were those known problems? And there's no dispute about this. One is, if the fragment was too small, you couldn't use a screw to fix it because it would break it up. Okay? So what was done? Percutaneous pinning. Pinning of through the fragment, across the fracture, into the stable bone. Clancy did that. Taught that. Okay? But what was the problem with that? And it was a known problem. The problem was pin migration. The pin would move. Okay? Now that's the known problem that this inventor worked with. The question then is, with a prior art that's not disputable, to the point I think it is, in some respect it is not disputable what it is, would that have been obvious to make an obvious solution? What do you think the obvious solution would be? Well, prevent the migration. That would be obvious.
Wasn't there something in the record in which your client said that this invention was revolutionary? Is that the word?
Those words were used. But again, remember the first point I made was...
That's a fact question, isn't it?
It is a fact question to secondary considerations. Secondary considerations can't control if there's no invention in the first place. But the claims are for an apparatus, use of simple items like a pin, a plate with holes, and a screw to set the plate. And
what about the level of ordinary skill in the art? There seems to be a pretty substantial dispute between you both as to the level of skill in the art, which could very well control the outcome of an obviousness determination.
I'm not so sure there is a dispute.
The dispute would be if the level of skill is required to have experience with bones and fractures, then your expert's testimony doesn't meet my Sundance opinion's requirements, and as such, you have no evidence to support your summary judgment motion. I think that seems like a pretty substantial factual dispute that would control the outcome of the obviousness determination.
Well, the question of whether it was a dispute properly raised. There was no dispute at the district court level of that at all.
No dispute over what the level of ordinary skill in the art is?
I believe so. I believe
you have two battling experts that say different things, and you have arguments made by counsel about the level of skill in the art. I think that qualifies as a dispute.
No.
I
mean, the finding was a person of ordinary skill in the art was 2 years of engineering degree with 2 to 5 years of experience in medical devices.
Their expert says no, it has to be somebody with bone fracture experience because, you know, a catheter and knowing how to use one doesn't get you to a position where you're qualified to assess bone fragments and pins and guide wires and all of that. Medical devices is really broad, stents, catheters, there's all kinds of things that someone could be skilled in that would not provide them with skill to be able to assess the obviousness of this invention.
The first time I believe that the concern or raising the dispute of potential skill of the art was at the appeal level, not at the lower court level. And let me raise something about the declaration of their expert. And this is important. That was waived. Expert testimony by their expert was waived because they failed to comply with the court's rules of when found an expert report timely. That issue was raised back in 2007 before the first appeal. The judge ordered no more expert reports by TriMet. And you can find that at A32, entry 45. And they didn't raise that on appeal last time. And now it's the law of the case. Now, listen to what we were put. We had a case where they had no expert opinion on interpreting the prior art after it came back, after the claim construction on the first appeal. We then, because the evidence that would be available, moved for summary judgment of invalidity, of course. We only had our expert. We only had our expert is what ordinary person of ordinary skill in the art would be. And then they file a declaration. Now, the court didn't consider their declaration. He didn't expressly raise it one or the other, but clearly didn't consider it because it's waived. There's no expert report. We got blindsided. After the close of discovery, after expert discovery, they come up with their own employee who files a declaration of expert testimony. Now, they say he didn't have to, but if you go that route, you have the biggest loophole in patent litigation to avoid expert reports. You just get your own employee better. Say you're going to be an expert, and then you show up for trial, no expert report, and voila, you're home free. But it doesn't work that way. He was specifically employed to file this declaration because it was reviewed priority he didn't have. And all their cases refer to personal knowledge. So if you really want to get into the experts, there should need to be considered.
Mr. Butler, the KSR informs that there must be some articulated reasoning with some rational underpinning to support the legal conclusion of obviousness. Where in the court's order do you find that articulated reasoning and rational underpinning?
Well, it goes back to what I told you was the theory of the case, and I believe it is in the court order. And I believe KSR says this, that if it is shown that there exists at the time of the invention a known problem, and in his opinion, the known problems are pieces too small to use screws. If you use a pin for the small piece fragments, we got a problem of pin migration. And then KSR says, if you know that problem for which there's an obvious solution encompassed by the claims, that's obviousness. That's our case. And that's what we have here.
But where is that in the order?
I would think you know the order well.
Well, I do know the order well. The order states what the problems were and how you went about solving the problem. Was that an obvious solution? And well, did it obtain a predictable result?
I'm looking for the language in the order that meets the standard required by the Supreme Court.
Well, if you go to if you go to the art, I'm on age 16. It's all laid out starting on paragraph 66 through paragraph 79. Paragraph 66 starts out, one of the ways in which a patent subject matter can be proved obvious is by noting that there existed at the time of the invention a known problem for which an obvious solution encompassed by the patent's claims.
Well, it's just a statement of law.
It is, and then the analysis went on to set forth what the known problems were and how it would have been an obvious, and it would be a question of law with the noted known prior art, would it have been obvious to restrain pin migration by putting it in a hole?
I mean, for example, you have paragraph 69, TriMet simply combined elements from two methods well known at the time for setting wrist fractures.
Okay.
But those two methods were different methods. One was an open surgical procedure, and the other was percutaneous.
But they used components of the claim of an apparatus claim that performed predicted functions of what we have here. And the only dispute is
That gets to the question I'm trying to get an answer to.
Well, then if you go to
predicted results.
Well, go to paragraph 71, and then talks about the problem of pin migration.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the common sense solution would be, well, you want to stabilize the pin. And I think that's based on the Feinberg Declaration. I think that's a common sense analysis anyway. If the problem is pin migration,
paragraph 72 says, well, because a screw can't be used to solve this problem, the logical solution would be to select a prior art plate that had holes. That's a plate that was used for a different purpose. That plate, the prior art plate, is used to attach bone fragments using screws.
But if you think it through screws, what those holes in the screws would do, they would prevent the movement of those screws and displacement. They'd lock them in. And that's the same mechanism we're trying to do with the pins, prevent pin migration.
Well, see, that's the analysis that I don't find in the order.
Well, I think it is.
I have no idea whether that's what the district court was thinking of or what the record might reflect or whether that's a proper basis for an obviousness conclusion. A lot of this is either just conclusory or simply statements that don't relate to the problem at hand.
Well, I think that it does. The problem at hand was pin migration. Then the question is, was there an obvious solution encompassed by the claim to prevent it? And putting a pin or a screw, whatever you want to keep from moving, in the direction would be to put it in a hole. I mean, that's what the holes do. That's what holes do. They constrain. They prevent the movement, whether it's a pin or a screw or something else. And that is the obviousness of this invention. And it's nothing new. It's nothing more than using an old element that's been used in the past to do what exactly is predicted of what a hole would do. It would constrain, with its boundaries, the movement. And that's the analysis. And again, it's based off identifying the problem, knowing what it is at the time, and coming up with a solution. And our person of ordinary skill in the art, I know Judge Moore has a concern about that one, but I don't believe there was any dispute about who a person of ordinary skill in the art was at the district court level.
Well, I looked back. You may be right. I can't find any
summary
judgment.
And our person qualifies, and that's the end of it.
I don't know if your person qualifies, okay. But they may not.
Well, I think he qualifies under
the
finding of the court who a person of ordinary skill in the art was. And then they bring this declaration, which is unauthorized, untimely, and it makes interpretation of prior art, which sure it raises a dispute, but it's probably not right. Temporary, where does the maze say the pins are in, or excuse me, the wires are in temporary? It doesn't say that. You can't get it from that. So, but again, that dispute, if any, goes to anticipation, not obviousness.
Thank you, Mr. Vogler.
Thank you.
Mr. Grossman has 3 minutes.
Just a few points, Your Honor. One was regarding the ordinary skill in the art. Dr. Feinberg, electrical engineer, testified, and that's at page 480, that one skilled in the art would have 2 years of experience with bone plates. And he testified at page 479 and 480, this was his first case with bone plates. They have the burden, clear and convincing evidence, that this invention was obvious by one of ordinary skill in the art. Dr. Feinberg is admittedly not one of ordinary skill in the art.
Oh, he didn't admit that. He went and took it back. I mean, you're stopping short. Yeah, he said exactly what you say he said. But then you go on to read later pages, which, by the way, I had to find at the end of the appendix. They weren't sort of contemporaneous. But he recants that. He says, well, no, it's not bone. Medical devices would be sufficient. So you can't say that his own testimony definitively prevents him from being one of skill in the art, because his testimony was a moving target, I'll grant you, but he recanted.
Okay.
Where else would you point me for your argument, though, that there was a dispute of fact over the level of skill in the art? Because I didn't see anything particular to that in your summary judgment opposition, which is what I was just scanning, because I thought surely you had raised it. I thought I saw it somewhere, but I didn't just find it in your summary judgment opposition.
You know, I don't think we did. I think what we said was the jury has a right to consider Dr. Medoff's statements and Dr. Feinberg's statements and make their conclusion. And we also stated that based upon what Dr. Feinberg testified, that he never worked with broken bones or plates, he's not one of ordinary skill in the art.
If we ended up sending this back, would you bring a motion that he's not one of skill in the art and under Sundance, therefore, shouldn't be allowed to offer such testimony?
The motion limiting, we would.
That's nice.
Yes.
But if we sent it back, the one thing about your brief that surprised me was your desire to be reassigned to a different judge. I thought you wrote it very respectfully, but it's a very extraordinary remedy. And even if we say you got it wrong twice, it doesn't seem to me to be enough to necessarily reassign it.
The reason I think it is the way, if I'm not trying to be presumptuous, but if you do send it back, the way the judge got rid of the case both times, just signing statements of the other side. I can accept if the judge reads everything and articulates a decision, but just to get it, and days after getting the reply brief, just days, I'm briefing this thick, just signs the proposed judgment and just crosses out proposed, and just signs statements of fact and law, just striking out proposed. I think this case warrants a new judge who just doesn't sign off on proposed facts and law that are just not, you know, I think just maybe he doesn't, some prejudice there. I don't know. But we would, again, not being presumptuous, prefer a little more attention.
Thank you, Mr. Grossman. Take the case under advisement.